Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
The sound of waiting. Waiting for news that could change your life. In a room not your own, with people you don't know very well. These are the moments and days and weeks that women with breast cancer must face. The results of a mammogram, waiting for the drip of a course of chemotherapy, waiting for radiation to begin, the results of a biopsy, the outcome of a lumpectomy. Waiting. Lisa Eccles, Crystal Miller, and Anita Coleman shared these moments with us throughout 2014. From WNYC and PRI, this is Under Her Skin, Living with Breast Cancer. Three women share the ups and downs of their lives after receiving a diagnosis. Breast cancer. Fearing it and experiencing it is something common to millions of women. But the details with these three women are different. Nationally, African-American women are 40% more likely to die following a breast cancer diagnosis than their white counterparts. Why? We will try to get closer to an answer. But even if we don't, we still value our time spent with these three survivors, Lisa, Crystal, and Anita. The details they shared with us show what it means to live with breast cancer.
My name is Lisa Eccles. I'm 46 years old. I live in Memphis, Tennessee. I was diagnosed with breast cancer on December the 9th, 2013.
Lisa's a hospital technician in a neonatal intensive care unit, a wife and mother of two. In her city, Memphis, black women are twice as likely to die from breast cancer as white women.
Your tumor is the size of a quarter. I'm thinking you between stage one and stage two. We can remove the tumor or we can remove the whole breast.
The language of cancer, lumps, tumors, tissue, all landmarks on a map of a woman's body.
I don't consider it a C. I consider it a T, which stands for a test for me. We all go through tests in life, and this is my test. And at the end of passing my test, I will have a story to tell somebody.
When did you get a hint that something was maybe going wrong here?
Well, I'm so good with myself, trying to be healthy. And my husband, who is a diabetic, when he was diagnosed, I got in gear as far as eating right, exercising, and going on doctor's appointments. So I already knew that in November, it was time for me to get my mammogram. My appointment was before Thanksgiving. But this particular time, after going, I want to say a few days later, I got a call at work and they asked me to come back a second time. So I went and had the test done, the ultrasound done. And this is when I found out on December the 9th, 2013, that I had the big C.
Well, what went through your mind there? I mean, you're the rock of the family there. You're the one who makes all the appointments. You're the one who takes care of your husband's diabetes and responsible for your two kids.
I was shocked, devastated, because I knew that in the back of my mind, I was doing all the right stuff. So, like I said, it was hard for me because at that point, I wanted to know, what did I do wrong? What did I do wrong? That was my biggest concern. Where did I go wrong at? Those thoughts come in your mind when you right. first hear it, because you're trying to figure out the puzzle. But after settling down, I realized that it wasn't for me to figure out.
You had some decisions to make, right?
I did. I had a lot of decisions to make. And when you been handed the C, it's like your life moves really fast. I've decided that I was going to have a bilateral mastectomy, which is removing both breasts and doing reconstruction. That is ahead of me, and I'm ready to go forward with it.
My name is Crystal Meller. My age is 28. I was diagnosed December 23rd, 2013, and I am a cancer survivor, even while being treated.
Crystal works in healthcare. She's a nurse here in New York City, and she detected a lump in her own breast before she ever got a mammogram.
I'm stage one. I'm actually triple positive. Some people are triple negative. I'm triple positive. 1 centimeter. I've had a lumpectomy. And also an additional thing is I've had my chemo before surgery. A lot of people have it after surgery. In my given case, it was better for me to have it before surgery. Something I struggled with, mind you, in the beginning.
These are decisions that come along with breast cancer. Decisions shared openly in our conversations that covered a lot of things. But these women also wanted to say in the course of our months together that it's okay to talk about all of this stuff.
This is an aspect of my life. It doesn't overshadow what's going on currently in other parts of my life. It doesn't overshadow anything that I accomplished already or that I'm going to accomplish. And, you know, that's important to me. It hasn't taken over everything.
When you first were diagnosed, what were your thoughts?
You know, I was shocked because, you know, I don't have this in my family. I work in cancer and my patients tend to be older. And, you know, I just didn't see this coming. Obviously, you know, when I felt the lump, I had a gut feeling, but I was just shocked and I didn't know how it was going to affect my life or my future. And, you know, it was scary.
Being in a medical environment, how do you avoid going down the rabbit hole of, oh, there's this treatment, there's this treatment, there's this research, there's this is a journal article to read, there's this new thing, there's this new... How do you keep from doing that?
I think in the beginning, I tried to look up stuff, and when something, the doctor said something, I'd run home and like Google it. What's tamoxifen? What's this? And I think it can kind of hurt you a little bit. I am all for people supporting each other and learning about different, you know, experiences. And but everything that happens to somebody else doesn't mean it's going to happen to you. So for now, I'm not really looking at things online. I have a rapport with my medical team, my breast oncologist and my breast surgeon. And, you know, I trust that they will bring me information as it comes up and that they will, if I need some type of data or supportive information, that they will be able to provide it.
Well, it sounds also like you've made a real conscious decision. There's data, mm-hmm. and then there's Crystal's life.
Right.
You know, and Crystal's life is real and data is kind of sitting there on the page.
Right.
How'd you come to that?
I think any significant event, especially breast cancer, it makes you learn about yourself. And now I know for sure that I'm controlling. This is something that I'm not in control of. So now what? You know, how do you proceed? I just think I've learned so much about myself and I try to do the best for what works for me.
My name is Anita Coleman. I am 54 years old. I live in Los Angeles, California, and I was diagnosed on February 21st, 2014. This is my second diagnosis for breast cancer.
Anita is our veteran. She knows the jargon, she knows the waiting, and the fear.
Stage 2 breast cancer. I had 2 types of tumors, 1 positive receptor, 1 negative. The first time, out of 16 lymph nodes, 14 of them were cancerous. This time, I believe out of 16 lymph nodes, only 2 of them were cancerous.
Sitting with Anita, it was like we were at her kitchen table. She had lots to say. And again, she believes silence about cancer doesn't help anything.
Because of the aggressiveness of my first diagnosis, I had to go 10 years before I was in remission. In 2011, I made my 10 years, and I was like, okay. But they had always told me that it could be dormant. And in February 2014, I went for my annual mammogram, and my primary care physician called me and he said, your mammogram looks suspicious. We want you to go to ultrasound. He said, it looks like, you know, you have cancer again. And I went for the ultrasound and they did see 2 lumps, and his assistant called and said, the doctor wants to see you in his office. And I was actually coming out of a store and I pulled over to the side and he told me, and it was like, okay. I was upset for a minute, but 99% of you says the test is going to be negative, but there's that 1% that said, just in case, you better get ready. And at that point I knew I had to get ready. So I did some crying there, went home, did some more crying, called a couple of my friends and family, let them do their crying. I said, okay, that's enough. That's it. Let's move on with this.
Is there any decision that you made the first time around that you wish you'd made now?
The first time around, I had asked them if I could have a double mastectomy, and they talked to me because at that time I was engaged, and they said I'm, you know, for relationships and for appearance. Now, at this age and what I'm thinking about appearance, which doesn't mean as much to me now as it did then, and don't get me wrong, I always keep myself up, but if I had known then, I probably would have had the double mastectomy, but I can't just keep going back to what I should have done, because I could have had the double mastectomy and they still could have diagnosed me with another cancer. So I can't beat myself up about that.
No. How do you feel about the statistics on the outcomes for African-American women and the really scary probabilities compared with other populations?
When you're going through a health challenge like this, one of the key factors is to remain stress-free, to be in a safe environment, quiet environment. And so many African-American women, they don't have the coverage that they need. And then some of them, I've met people. I know women who had cancer and chose not to have the treatment because they had to go to work to support their family. My whole thing is you don't have to have a lot of money to make it. There's a lot of people and a lot of groups out there that would help, but pride sometimes keeps people from asking for help. Our exercise, our health, our eating habits, we have to change those. And people don't like to change, but a lot of people going through cancer don't realize they have to exercise. With the education about the disease and the education about the recovery process, we have to be more proactive. And that's where African-American women have not been proactive because they're so busy taking care of their families. A lot has to change.
We chose Lisa Eccles, Crystal Miller, and Anita Coleman to share their stories of what it means to fight a life-threatening disease, partly because their moments of fear and relief, their day-to-day routines of treatment and appointments and medication associated with breast cancer are common to so many women. But why do the numbers say that the outcomes for African-American women are so different? For the science behind the statistics, we turn to Dr. Nancy Lynn Keating, a professor of healthcare policy at Harvard Medical School and a primary care physician at Brigham and Women's Hospital.
Definitely we do know that African-American women are more likely to be diagnosed with breast cancers that have more aggressive features, to have tumors that are called triple negative tumors. So these are tumors that have estrogen and progestin receptor negative and also are negative for another tumor marker called HER2. And we do know that these tumors are more aggressive biologically, they're more difficult to treat, and women with these tumors do worse. But still, these only account for a minority of tumors that African-American women get.
And in our encounters and being on a journey with our three women friends, we've met people who are real caregivers who, you know, think of everyone else before themselves, who maybe don't report their own symptoms as rapidly as others. Are we finding that as a feature of the population of African-American women generally?
I think that's right. I think the reasons for this are vast and encompass all different areas. You know, some of them are that women who are minorities are less likely to evaluate an abnormality in their breast. They take longer to get to the doctor. There's some evidence that screening may be a little bit less. In some settings, that has caught up, but in other settings, it does seem like African-American women may be less likely to get screened. They may be less likely to have a usual doctor who's the one that recommends screening for them. Even if they get screened, if there's an abnormality, it might take longer for them to get that evaluated for numerous reasons we can come back to. There's evidence that once diagnosed, African-American women are diagnosed with more advanced tumors, higher stage, which is more difficult to treat and more difficult to cure than the earlier tumors. And there's evidence that African-American women are less likely to get treatment that's recommended, such as definitive surgery. They're more likely to have delays in getting treatment, and they also seem to be a little less likely to complete a recommended course of therapy. And sometimes they're getting cared for at hospitals and by doctors who are under-resourced because they're safety net providers who don't have the same kind of resources as other providers. And then, you know, factoring in on top of all of this and overlaying on top of all of this are the social and ecological issues. And a lot of this just factors in with American society, which is that African-American women are more likely to live in areas of poverty. Along with that comes all kinds of issues. They're more likely to have jobs for which it's more difficult to get away from work and less likely that they have insurance through their job. If they have insurance, they're more likely to be underinsured, meaning they either have insurance through Medicaid, which does not reimburse as well as other providers, and so that can factor in on who will see them. They may also be more likely to have health insurance plans with high deductibles, so higher out-of-pocket costs to get to the doctor. Then on top of that, they might have difficulty getting childcare or getting transportation to the doctor, which, I mean, imagine if you need radiation therapy and it takes 5 weeks of daily treatments and you don't have anyone to take care of your children, or you can't leave your job and know that your job will be there for you when you get back. And on top of all of this, there's also some concern that there may be issues of trust in their doctors due to sort of prior history of African Americans in American healthcare. And there's also a hypothesis that poverty is associated with chronic stress, which may also inhibit the body's ability to fight itself and to fight off diseases itself. So lots and lots of issues.
Well, certainly the women that we've met really want to talk about their experience, and the responses that we've gotten indicate a kind of hunger out there to get this conversation going. Do you think it's already started or that much more needs to be done?
I think it has started, but I also agree that much more needs to be done. I will tell you that, you know, some efforts to try to improve seeking care for women who notice a problem have focused on really trying to improve understanding of breast health and get women talking about their own health and, you know, reaching out through churches and through community organizations to really help people understand what it means to take care of yourself, how to look after yourself, how to think about and get help when you need it. But that's not going to solve the problem. You know, I think that there's also issues even at the provider level of when someone comes in with a problem, how long does it take to evaluate that and, you know, get from breast problem to diagnosis? And then once the diagnosis happens, then it's a matter of getting to treatment. And then once treatment happens, it's a matter of completing treatment. And I think at each of these steps of the way, there are lots of things factoring in that are making it more challenging. You know, I think so far we really have a long way to go.
Dr. Nancy Lynn Keating is a professor of healthcare policy at Harvard Medical School and a primary care physician at Brigham and Women's Hospital.
You keep living, you're going to get a little pouch, you're going to get some love handles, but you still are the same person. You're still that beautiful being.
That's the voice of Anita Coleman entering in her audio diary, her experience on July 31st, 2014.
To find yourself knowing that you are beautiful regardless to what you look like. I want to be considered and remembered by the person I am, not how I look.
And here's Lisa Eccles on July 7th.
I had both breasts removed. With that, there is no natural breast tissue. So it has affected my body. But the thing is, it has not affected how I live from this point on.
This is Crystal Miller on July 29th.
You know, I have a scar on my face from a car accident that I was in. And, you know, I used to be, like, so insecure about the scar. As I got older, like, when I would talk about it, people would be like, what scar? They hadn't, you know, hadn't noticed it. And that's when I knew, like, it's all about how you feel about yourself. And a lot of people, they don't pay attention to those type of things. They don't; those aren't the things that they notice about you first. So I feel like if I feel sexy, if I feel beautiful, other people usually feel that way about you.
There's no amount of vigilance alone that can keep cancer from returning or spreading, just like there's nothing that can keep the experience from spreading into all parts of life, like trying to make ends meet. Here's Lisa Eccles, August 15th.
It has been stressful to a certain extent because my husband having to cover majority of all the bills. But it's just the little bitty things that we try to keep up with. And some of them we can keep up with and some of them we can't. And we have to have food or have light. So we usually just pay those, and the ones that we can't pay,
we just call them and say, well, we can't make a payment this month. We'll double up next month.
Crystal Miller, July 8th.
I definitely spent a lot of money. I kind of tried not to worry about it while I was getting treated because I knew it was in my account and I knew I had a little room and I didn't want to stress about things unnecessarily. But in the beginning, when I was on chemotherapy, especially like the first month, I took a lot of cabs to work and to treatment. And I was spending maybe about $25 to go to work and then about $40 to go home every day. So, you know, that adds up.
And here's Anita Coleman on August 17th.
This time around, I was laid off around the same time I was diagnosed. But I had relocated. My living expenses were less. And staying off from work, you just don't get to do a lot of the extra things. But it's okay because I have time to go on walks, go to the beach, just sit around and take in the simple things that I don't have a chance to take in when I'm working. Cancer can either beat you or you beat it. I prefer the latter.
Anita Coleman, November 12th, 2014. Our six-month series, Under Her Skin, came to an end at the end of the year. And for Anita Coleman, December began with some good news.
It's December 3rd, 2014. This is the last day of radiation. I am truly thankful. I am truly blessed.
On December 10th, Anita underwent an elective surgery to remove her ovaries after testing positive for the BRCA gene, which puts her at a higher risk for ovarian cancer as well as breast cancer. But Anita told us she saw that surgery as one of her last hurdles.
My current health challenge and the experiences that have accompanied it have provided me with the greater appreciation of life. What you see, the physical me you see when the hair was gone, the nails turned black, the swelling, that's not me. I am inside of me.
I still have one more surgery to have.
By the close of our series, Lisa Eccles in Memphis had a decision to make. Her doctors told her she was looking good, but after her year of treatments, she wasn't going to take any chances.
That surgery is a hysterectomy. That is something that I wanted to do to be on the safe side. So I will be getting that done right after the holidays.
Besides her hysterectomy, Lisa has had six rounds of chemotherapy, a bilateral mastectomy, Herceptin treatment, reconstruction, and implants. And she now takes medication that she will remain on for years.
To be able to step out of my comfort zone and do something that I never had to do in my life, you know, I really, really like this experience to be able to talk to people and motivate people to keep pushing on and just know that you're not in this by yourself.
That's Lisa talking about the experience of telling her story to us, something she never thought she would do.
Even when you are about to give up, don't.
Probably the most cheerful of our three new friends is young Crystal. Her year finished with a bright anticipation of many more years ahead.
I feel like I can see the other side, you know? The storm's over and I can see the rainbow starting to form. I think it's the most important part of the story, the recovery.
This is Crystal Miller, 1 year after her diagnosis.
To me, this wasn't about breast cancer in itself. It was about me facing something that was out of my hands, that some things I didn't have control over, about finding my relationship with God. And I think it probably may have surprised people who were closer to me to know what I was feeling at times or what I was going through. I definitely had my moments, and I think that's okay. I think it was good to show that.
That's the lesson of our series. Winning against cancer is not erasing death. It is learning to live more deeply. Lisa Eccles tells everyone it's easier when you think we instead of I. Here's Lisa's message on December 3rd.
We can do it. We can beat this. You can beat this. And you're gonna beat this. Just fight on, sister. Fight on.
I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.